You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your daily source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football, and Grandstand Sports Network. As always, follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. That's K-I-S-T. As always, I am joined by the best co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
Oh, every day is a good day to be alive, Mike. Glad to be back on the podcast with you. It's two guests in 2 days. I'm currently quite lit, Michael.
Yeah, we are very happy to have spoken with Danny Kelly from The Ringer. His interview is going to be coming up here, so don't change that channel. Before we get to that, wanted to remind you guys, go to iTunes, rate, review, leave us 5 stars, leave your Twitter handle in the review. We will enter you into a contest to win a free PFF Edge subscription, which is worth $40. Also wanted to let you know, on Twitter, at Locked On Eagles is live, and it's also a follow back account. So go follow Locked On Eagles for all your Locked On Eagles podcast, articles, all that good stuff, and we will follow you back. Remember, that's at Locked On Eagles. All right, Ben, let the gentle listeners know about our friends at Draft before we kick it over to this interview with Danny Kelly from The Ringer.
Yeah, so if you're like me, you enjoy fantasy football and you don't really get how daily fantasy works with like the auction apps. I know that Mike's good at that, but that's not me. And obviously, we're getting into the later weeks of the season. So if you're at the point where you are not making your league playoffs, I wouldn't know what that feels like. But if you're at that point, Draft is a fantastic outlet for you to use. Over 500,000 people already using it. The basic premise, it's a real-life snake draft, but it's done in under 5 minutes. So there's no auto picks or anything like that. And you join for just 1 week, right? You play a one-week draft just like you would for one of these daily fantasy sites, but it's a snake draft, so it's a lot more easier to use. You're playing for cold hard cash, right? It's a betting site, so if you're good at fantasy football, this is the spot for you. Hey, your chances of winning 80% better than they are on regular sites. So for Locked On Eagles, here's what you're gonna do. You're gonna either download the Draft app or you're gonna go to draft.com. Now the promo code is L-O-N-F-L, right? Locked On NFL, that's L-O-N-F-L. And with your first deposit, you get a free entry into a Locked On draft. So what you'll do is you'll search Locked On Eagles for your potential draft. You'll join our draft, and hey, because you're a Locked On Eagle listener, you've got a $100 money back guarantee from Draft. So go ahead, put your first deposit in, enter the promo code L-O-N-F-L, and you'll get a $100 money back guarantee from the Locked On network. So go to your app store, go to draft.com, download the app, go to the Locked On Eagles draft. You can join. You're playing me, Mike, and other Locked On Eagles listeners. We're going to take your money from you. I'm very sorry, but join. Have a great time on the Draft app.
All right, so we are here with our special guest. He is Danny Kelly from The Ringer. Danny, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. Let our listeners know where they can find all your work, where they can find you on social media, all that good stuff.
Yeah, obviously you can find my writing at theringer.com, and then I'm at Danny B. Kelly on Twitter, and that's, I spend a lot of time on Twitter, so it's probably the best place to find me.
Don't we all?
Yeah, as we all do. Danny is here to help us preview the Seahawks-Eagles primetime matchup this weekend. So we're going to get right into it, because we're going to cover all different facets of this game throughout the week. Yesterday we had the a crossover edition with Locked On Seahawks. We covered a bunch of things, so go back and listen to that if you haven't heard it yet. But one thing I wanted to ask you about, Danny, was especially about the offensive line. Russell Wilson has been pressured at a higher percentage than any other quarterback in the NFL. He's the most pressure quarterback in the league. Now, how has that been impacted by Dwayne Brown, the Dwayne Brown trade? From what I see, he hasn't allowed a sack yet. Has he improved the line as a whole? Or, okay, I'll put it to you this way. If the Eagles defense, their front four, which gets the highest percentage of pressures in the NFL, is a wood chipper, are the Seahawks the wood?
I mean, yeah, they have been really bad this year, obviously. You know, it's the constant battle here for people in Seattle, for fans of the Seahawks. Just the offensive line has just been really bad for a couple of years now. The Brown trade has made an impact, though. I think I was looking at the pressure rates for the Seahawks. This is per Pro Football Focus. Over the last, since week eight, since he was traded to the Seahawks pressure rate is down to 35.6, which is right in the middle kind of the NFL. I think it's 14th in that time. So, I mean, that's a big improvement as far as I'm concerned, because if you can be middling, whereas early in the year it was like atrocious, that to me is a big step forward. I mean, he is obviously a really good player. I think, you know, one guy isn't going to change the whole complexion of the entire offensive line, but they started to get some guys back. Luke Jokel is back now, so that's big for them. I think he's, you know, obviously he's a bit of a, I think he's probably more of the butt of jokes more than anything at this point, because he's a little bit of a bust, but he's a lot better than some of the other guys the Seahawks have on the offensive line. So he's been good in terms of just having a veteran guy there next to him. So it's Brown, Jokel, and then you got Justin Britt in the middle, Ethan Postage at right guard. Now he just moved over to the right, and then Jermaine Ifedi on the right right tackle. So
am I wrong to say that Britt has been one of the better linemen on that line all year?
Yeah, he has been. He's kind of, last year he was probably their best lineman. Mm. And then, you know, he's sort of just, I don't think he's like explosive and great, and like he's not going to like reach a bunch of guys in the zone running game or anything like that. But he's solid in pass pro, and that's what they need. So long story short, last week the Seahawks did not get sacked. Or I should say Russell Wilson did not get sacked for the first time in about 2 years. So
big day.
So that was huge. I mean, obviously that's the 49ers. They've got a couple guys on their defensive line, but the Eagles are a different story. So I'm expecting obviously the Eagles to get pressure and Russell Wilson to do his typical thing where he's, you know, escaping out of the pocket and all that. But the offensive line has been slightly better, I'll put it that way.
All right. Well, Danny's happy with middling, so that's good news for Seahawks fans. We're at average. Let's talk about your leading rusher being your quarterback. Let's talk about Russell Wilson having twice as many rushing yards as any other running back on your roster, Danny. I don't know how to work Pro Football Reference to see if that's as aberrative as I think it is, but that's got to be pretty crazy. Russell Wilson right now with 400 rushing yards, and then Chris Carson's got 200. He hasn't even played for a few weeks. He was only in like four games.
Yeah, he's been gone since like, I don't even know what, week four or five or whatever.
Yeah, and he's got more rushing yards than Lacy, more rushing yards than Rawls, more rushing yards than McKissick. I'm not trying to put you through pain here. I'm just trying to give the listeners some perspective here. Eagle fans know they've done a great job in the running game, and as we've talked about on this podcast, especially against running backs, they've only allowed 2.9 yards per carry for running backs over the year, but rushing quarterbacks have kind of been a little bit of the problem. C.J. Beathard had a good time, and he's only kind of mobile. You know, Cam Newton, Alex Smith did well, giving up about 6 yards per carry to rushing quarterbacks. Looking forward for this Eagle game, you know, Seahawks 7-4. When they win, do you usually see the running game go through Wilson? He's picking up yards with the speed. He's scrambling a lot. Is that kind of how they generate kind of some sort of like a fake running game? Is that the way they keep defenses honest?
Yeah, I mean, this year especially, obviously, going back to throughout Russell Wilson's career when Marshawn Lynch was on the team, you know, it was really, really balanced offense. Now it's all Wilson, essentially. I mean, you hit the nail on the head in terms of he's, you know, twice as many rushing yards as the closest running back on the team, which is just insane to me. I don't know if you guys have heard this stat lately, but Wilson is accounted for 82% of the Seahawks' total yardage this year.
That's some Lamar Jackson nonsense, man.
Yeah, it's on pace to be an NFL record. So the Seahawks have four rushing touchdowns this year, and Russell Wilson has three of them. So... basically this year they've had to really try to manufacture a run game just with Wilson. They don't do a lot of like read option stuff anymore. It's, you know, they're actually just a pass first team at this point. I mean, they've kind of, not that they've given up on it, but they just can't run. So they don't do it quite as often actually. And here's a piece of trivia and for people that haven't really been paying attention to the box scores, but Russell Wilson leads the NFL in pass attempts right now.
Goodness.
Which is rare. I mean, like, he was always known as a low volume, very efficient passer throughout his career. And, you know, now he's one of the, you know, sort of the volume guys. And so I'll ask you guys this, and just, I don't know off the top of my head, what do you know how often the Eagles play zone versus man, or how that kind of, how they split that up with their corners and stuff?
Right. So it's very interesting because with the Ronald Darby injury, things got a little bit wacky, right? Eagles lost their starting corner. They were playing some guys who were a little bit lower key, and you were a lot more heavily in a zone, sometimes a pattern match sort of a situation there.
Right.
We've seen in the limited time Darby began the year, and then now more frequently since Darby's come back, an incidence of man coverage, but they're very willing to mix it up, which is a new thing for Jim Schwartz, and we love it. We're very excited.
Yeah, and you'll see a lot of cover zero in the red zone as well. We'll come after you, and we'll play man coverage as well.
Well, that's really interesting, and for a couple of reasons. First, you know, against man coverages, that's kind of where Wilson does his damage on the ground. Just because, you know, if you got have cornerbacks with their back turned, you know, they're not going to see him in time, and he's pretty quick. So that's one thing where he has excelled in his career. And I would say, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Wilson's also a cover zero killer in his career. He's he's very good at identifying that and exploiting it. He and Doug Baldwin kind of have that connection, obviously. And then Jimmy Graham this year has been better with that too. So we'll see how they mix it up. I wouldn't be surprised if the Eagles went a little bit heavier zone, but just for that reason, right, in terms of letting him get loose in the ground. But we'll see about that. It'll be really interesting to watch.
Right. Let's flip it over to the Seahawks defense, actually, because this works in perfectly with my next question. Again, I'm going to be a little bit mean here, you hear, Danny, but a lot of injuries for the Seahawks, especially on the defensive side with, you know, the secondary's taking a killing. You know, Richard Sherman, he's on IR. Cam Chancellor, he's going to be out for this game. And then obviously you've lost Cliff Averill. You've lost Malik McDowell. You're losing guys there on the defense. It's been bleeding a little bit. And Shaq Griffin, rookie out of UCF, good player, liked him a lot coming out. It seemed like he was doing well there. Maybe it was the dreadlocks that were confusing me, but it looked like he was doing all right in Seattle to start out. But he might be back this week. He had an injury. Mike Davis, another corner, going to be back. Obviously, you've had, you know, Jeremy Lane, Justin Coleman. They're trying to work in some different guys, and now you got to replace Chancellor. That's always tough.
Yeah.
When it comes to this scheme, that's very you know, typically it's kind of attributed. It's the Seahawks prototype there that you're running. Chris Richard, defensive coordinator, running a lot of cover three. Got Thomas there as the single high. Mm-hmm. Do you anticipate them sticking with the same scheme despite the second string personnel? Do you think that that'll work okay? Or do you think they're going to have to get a little bit more flexible with the way they deploy coverages?
That's a really good question. I figure for the most part, they'll probably run their stuff. I think Pete Carroll's always been, you know, he's been coaching the same defense since like the 70s. I mean, like, you know, he just kind of does his thing. I think they do, you know, they'll mix it up and they'll give the Eagles a little bit different looks, I'm sure, at times. Chris Richard has been, I mean, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but it just anecdotally, it feels like he's been a little bit more creative with some of the stuff they do than maybe like a Gus Bradley or a Dan Quinn in the past. But now, that being said, with younger guys, they do have Byron Maxwell back, so he's kind of ingrained in the system, and so that helps. But with younger guys next to Earl Thomas on both sides, it's just not going to be the same, because Chancellor, Thomas, and Richard Sherman, and whoever they had at the other side at corner, they all played together for a long time in the Legion of Boom, and they always talk about being tied together by a string. And so, like, you know, passing guys off as they go over the middle, right, you know, that kind of stuff, figuring out who they're going to take when there's two seam routes coming up the field. That stuff is really, for the Seahawks defense over the last couple of years, which has obviously been really good. A big part of that is, like, Earl Thomas and Sherman have incredible, like, nonverbal communication skills and like that kind of stuff. It's just like that chemistry.
Yeah.
So that's obviously going to take a huge hit. So they might try and, you know, do some more too high stuff. I don't think they'll do a lot of that, but they do mix it in, you know, but generally speaking, I think they're still going to run their stuff and just hope for the best. And like you said, Shaq Griffin has been actually really exciting for the Seahawks fans this year, just because he's really been sort of a calm, it doesn't look like it's too big for him type of player. You know, like sometimes you see rookies that are just like panic stricken, and he's never really shown that. He's gotten beat like a couple times, but nothing major, nothing really like, wow, that was terrible. It was like, wow, that was a good throw, you know, that kind of thing. So he's been good. And Justin Coleman, he's been up and down. He's kind of, you know, he was a trade target. They traded for him with the Patriots earlier. I don't remember exactly when it was, but he's been decent at times. He's been pretty good. So, you know, they have some depth. And Bradley McDougal, that signing in the offseason turns out big, because he's going to take over for Chancellor, essentially. He's an experienced player. You know, he's obviously not Cam Chancellor in terms of a hitter over the middle, but he's, you know, he's disciplined enough, and he has enough experience to sort of do their thing. But long story short, I mean, I'm kind of rambling at this point, but long story short, they are just not going to be, I don't think they're going to be as, you know, as tight and as good anymore, just because it's hard to really lose all those guys and just maintain.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not just cover three. They run cover three with a lot of other wrinkles thrown into it, too, that it involves seeing the same thing pre-snap as a secondary or being able to communicate it in time to execute it as well. So I want to move to something here as just for, as far as an overall picture. You wrote an article back in September that posed a question about if it was time to be concerned with Seattle's slow start. Some of the highlights include Pete Carroll creating a quote-unquote no-loss November motto while at USC that led to a 25-1 record in that month. What was it, 9 years there? So that translated into the NFL. And in the Russell Wilson era, from 2012 to 2016, they go from 25-14-1 in the first half of the season to a 31-9 record in the second half. It's a substantial difference. Regarding their somewhat sluggish start this season of 5-3, which is right in line with their historical average in the beginning of the season, which is funny, and their 2-1 start in the second half of the season, does this feel like ho-hum, we've danced this dance before? Or does this feel like different than those previous years where they were able to get hot just in time for the playoffs?
Well, not to be like a fence sitter, but a little bit of both. You know, obviously right now it feels familiar because I think Russell Wilson's starting to heat up a bit. The Jimmy Graham factor is really big this year. He's been huge in the red zone. He's actually been like the best player inside the 10-yard line in terms of touchdowns and targets and all that this year, which is exactly what I've been like asking for like 3 years now, which is really nice. That, on the other hand, it doesn't feel the same for a couple of reasons. One, they don't have a run game at all. Whereas in the last few years, they have at least a little bit of one last year. And then this year, it's just like gone. I think they have the fewest rushing yards out of running backs this year of any team. So that's a little bit different, and I don't know how that's going to translate. Because actually in the past, it's mostly actually been Russell Wilson kind of taking over stuff in the past. So I feel like it's not really that different, but it does feel different in that sense. The other thing that's different is the NFC is just really good this year. Normally, I think you'd be feeling pretty good about a 7-4 record going into whatever week 13 this is. But they're on the outside looking in right now, you know, and so I think it's essentially a coin flip as to whether or not, you know, they get in at this point. And so that to me feels really different, and I don't know where it's going to go. There's one stat I wanted to point out to you guys about first half, second half. This was from Scott Barrett over at PFF.
Love his
Russell
work.
Wilson actually leads the NFL in fourth quarter passer rating. He has 134 rating in the fourth quarter.
Sweet.
14 touchdowns and one interception. So he's just insanely locked in the fourth quarter this year. So he tends to get hot as the game goes on, and that kind of translates to the season as well. Like as the season goes on, he just kind of gets in the zone or whatever. So so that's kind of a weird, interesting sort of wrinkle with the Seahawks, but this year. And I can see them catching fire in the second half. They do have a really, really tough schedule though, so that could kind of throw things off.
Right, let's talk about that schedule that remains. You got 5 games left on the docket. Obviously, the 2 big ones you got circled are this week at home against the Eagles, and then 2 weeks from now, Rams are coming to town. Rams right now, 1 game up in the division. They've also got the Eagles on their docket in the next week. And then that game right now, Seahawks already have 1 win over the Rams. If it's still a 1-game sort of situation, that second win over the Rams gives you guys the tiebreaker. Even though you'll be tied, you'll be leaving the division. So that's a huge one. Besides that, you know, obviously the Jaguars away, that's going to be a tricky game for sure. But if they lost to the Cardinals, they can lose to anybody. And then you got the Cowboys and the Cardinals to finish. So yeah, the Seahawks are in a place where even though they're outside looking in, it does seem like with some big games left, they can control their destiny a little bit. My question to you is right now, you know, like you said, coin flip whether or not they get in. They're currently the 7th seed. I'm kind of wondering, you know, it's a 2-part question. I'll give you the first part now. You're stepping into Pete Carroll's white sneakers there. What has to change moving forward for them to secure a playoff berth? What do they got to do?
Yeah, there's a few things that come to mind. The first thing for me, they got to get their pass rush going a little bit better. I mean, there's just so much. I mean, obviously you lost Averill and that's big, but you got to me, they have so much talent on that defensive line that it's just kind of crazy to me that they haven't like been one of the best, you know, pass rushing teams in the NFL so far. Mm-hmm. And Sheldon Richardson has definitely flashed at times. Frank Clark and Michael Bennett are also very like explosive on the defensive line. But I think if they're going to go far in the playoffs, if they're going to make the playoffs, and then if they're going to do anything in the playoffs, like it's going to help a lot if they can just go off with their defensive line. I mean, we've seen teams take over with their pass rush, and especially with so much youth in the secondary and kind of like the injuries they've had in the secondary, I think that could kind of cover up for all that. So to me, that's a big thing. I don't have any faith that their run game is going to get going. So at this point, I don't know if it matters. It obviously help a lot, but I'm kind of more on the thing where if Russell Wilson can kind of go off and do his thing, and if the Seahawks can get that pass rush going, then that makes them, to me, you know, not necessarily a Super Bowl contender, but essentially, you know, but definitely one of the, you know, sort of dark horses in the conference.
All right. So now second half of the question, there was a great moment after that Falcons game where you tweeted, and I believe I quote, "Death created time to grow the things it would eventually kill," which is terrifying. That's very morbid. But it seems like the Seahawks are kind of stuck in a loop, right? Obviously, you've had Schneider there in the front office for a while. Pete Carroll's the head coach for a while. And it seems like every year we're at the same point where the Seahawks are kind of underperforming in some games they shouldn't be underperforming in. They're great at home. Offensive line is in shambles. It's a rotation of unhealthy backs. Defense playing great. And you're all going to sneak in the playoffs on the back of Russell Wilson heroics, right? It's we're just kind of groundhog daying through every single Seattle season as we go along. So, you know, I asked you what had to change for this season to get into the playoffs. I'm curious, bigger picture, you know, we've seen them be more aggressive on the trade market, I think, this year with the Richardson trade. You alluded earlier to the trade that they made for the cornerback from New England. You know, they've been moving some pieces, Dwayne Brown as well. Do you foresee some changes in the coaching staff, some more different people in the front office? You know, is the ownership kind of satisfied with the way things are going, the same recurring problems? Like, what do you think's happening? Give me like a 3-year sort of perspective.
I mean, that's really tough to answer, obviously, just because I think with Tom Cable and Daryl Bevel, I know Daryl Bevel is one of the longest tenured coordinators in the NFL at this point, if not the longest. I mean, he's been around basically, I think, since Russell Wilson was drafted. I'm trying to think of what year he was drafted, but 2012. Anyways, yeah, he's been around for a while. They've kind of just done their thing. I think that Pete Carroll is the one who's in charge of this. I don't think that I couldn't see Paul Allen coming in and being like, you need to fire one of your coaches, but you never know. Because he's just done a good job of kind of letting Pete Carroll do his thing, and obviously the results are there. Pete Carroll's taking the Seahawks from, you know, whatever it was before he came, like a last place team, and turn them into a perennial championship caliber team. And that's what John Schneider always talks about too. So I don't see them making huge changes. I know a lot of people in Seattle really want to see Tom Cable go, just because the offensive line has been sort of the Achilles heel for them for so many years now. They've sunk a lot of investments into that line, and you haven't really seen results and things like that. So I know a lot of people really, really would love to see him go. But I just could see the Seahawks just sticking with everybody, honestly, unless you see somebody leave because they get hired somewhere else. It just wouldn't surprise me that much if Pete Carroll just wants to kind of stay the course, you know, keep going. And they could obviously make the excuse like this year just kind of didn't work out because of the injury situation too. So, yeah, I think overall, the one thing to kind of keep in mind in terms of the coaches, I wouldn't be surprised if they kept everybody. In terms of players, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens going forward, because there's a couple guys with, you know, big guys to talk about here. So Jimmy Graham is going to be a free agent. Sheldon Richardson is going to be a free agent. There's, you know, Paul Richardson is going to be a free agent. So there's some like guys that are like big name. And then obviously you have to decide what to do with Cliff Averill, Cam Chancellor, you know, Richard Sherman even, because you know, now you're like talking like he's probably going to take like a year to get back, right? And so that's like middle of the season. So there's a lot of, I would say there's going to be a lot more changes in the personnel this offseason. You could see the Seahawks get a lot younger, and that could be a good thing. I mean, obviously, I don't know, like, yeah, they have so many good veteran players that make up the foundation of their defense, but at the same time, early, you know, they were really, really, really good when they had a lot of young guys, you know, young, hungry draft picks that are just like trying to make their way in the NFL. That's kind of been Pete Carroll's thing too, going back, you know, forever. He's always really relied on young teams. So I think that there's probably going to be some pretty big changes going on with the Seahawks in terms of some of their veteran players.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we looked ahead. Let's bring it back in time and look at it at a singular game level with the Eagles. The line is -6 last I checked. The Eagles are giving up 6 points, which I don't know if I've ever seen the Seahawks getting 6 points at home. The over-under is 47.5. What are your picks? You got the Seahawks covering, and do you have the over or the under?
I think right now, if you gun to my head, I'm going to choose to the Eagles win, and then the Seahawks cover. Because the Seahawks are, you know, like going back to 2010 or 2012, they're a real tough out for basically everybody.
Yeah.
Especially at home. I think that the Seahawks do match up pretty well with the Eagles in terms of, they stop the run really well. They've been really good against the run lately. Mm-hmm. So, that's a factor. I don't know how – I think that the Eagles pass rush is going to be a big deal, so that could kind of throw everything in a wrench. But
yeah.
I think they'll play them close, hopefully. But I do think the Eagles will win. I think the Seahawks will cover. And over-under, what is it? 49? What was it? 49?
47.5.
47.5. Man, that sounds right, too.
Yeah, I was thinking under. I think it might be a little touch and go of first half. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'll go under as well. Yeah. I think it'll probably be a bit of a defensive battle.
Yeah. And Ben, you had pretty much the same thing, right, when we talked yesterday?
I had the over, man. And we're going to have to talk about this on the Friday show. Like I said, I wouldn't touch this line because Seattle at home is weird.
Yeah.
Like them being not favored in Seattle, messing with that. Yeah. But the over is, if I were to bet on this, the over is what I like. But we'll talk about it on Friday.
Okay. All right. Danny, thank you so much for stopping by. Let the good people know, our gentle listeners know, where to find all your work.
All right. TheRinger.com, obviously. And then Danny B. Kelly on Twitter.
Awesome, man. Danny, thank you so much for stopping by, dude.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Right. Yeah, have a good one, Danny.
Take care, brother.
All right, you too.
So that was our interview with Danny Kelly from The Ringer. We thank him so much for stopping by. Tomorrow, me and Ben are going to be killing it on the preview show. We're going to get even more in-depth than we had the last 2 days. Also, remember to go to LockedOnEagles.com. Ben just dropped a nice piece over there, highlighting some running game stuff, offensive line stuff for the Eagles. So go to LockedOnEagles.com. And remember, you got to keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.